Are we all here? So, shall we kick off? Good morning, everyone. Hope you're all ready to go after the coffee. If you're like me, you're sort of now buzzing and you're probably trying to bounce off the ceiling. In this, we're going to try and multitask because we've got the slideshow on the one hand, but we're also going to refer to this handout and we will be looking at one or two pages in this. Now, I'm going to curse Microsoft because the way it's printed out, it's in review mode. I'm just pleased that most of the comments were actually removed before this was went to print. There will be another version on the VLE over the weekend, so when it prints, it will come out as full size, and you won't have to get your reading glasses on. This is general guidance. It is something you can refer to during the year. What is in here are not precedents, although I have taken them on the whole from Dunford, the general notary. They have been adapted for this presentation, simplified, really just to try and hit one or two key points. So during the assignments, you might want to turn to this just to pick up one particular point, just looking at the four areas we're going to look at, but please don't lift anything from this. Go to one of the two books, either Brook or Dunford. I'm going to be concentrating in this session on the four areas of work which are listed on the front page. We're not going to be looking at other areas of notarial work, such as bills of exchange, protests, oaths and affirmations. We're just sticking to these four areas. The four areas are here. Notarial attestation, direct notarial certificates, which is a very important area of what you'll be looking at through the year. Standalone certificates, this is something like a certified copy of something. That's the classic standalone, where only the notary is signing your notarial certificate. And finally, documents in public form. There's a session on public form this afternoon. We'll touch on it briefly. Most of your work should fit into one of these four categories. So if somebody puts something on your desk, unless it's something exotic like a billing exchange, if it's something where the client has said, I need you to deal with this document, you should be able to put it into one of these four categories. The first one we're going to look at is notarial attestation. I'd like you to turn over to page 2, which is on the back of page 1, and hopefully, if you are a solicitor, you will recognise the word signed as a deed by. This is how a solicitor would deal with the attestation of an ordinary, everyday deed. And if you can't recognise that, the door is at the back. If you then turn over to page 3, we're going to just have a look at how a notary would deal with this. And essentially it looks very, very similar, but there is just more to it. You will come across this. It is actually, I hope, reasonably straightforward. Normally what happens is if you get a document that requires an attestation in this form, the document will arrive and you look at this and think, oh, thank goodness for that, it's straightforward. All I've got to do is fill in the blanks. There's very little for you to draft. On the whole, it comes from common law countries, perhaps Hong Kong, perhaps South Africa. You will actually find this turns up very rarely in practice, but I like to start here because at least you begin to find that is something familiar with. So what are the differences with this? If you have a look, the key is date and place. Previously, it's just signed as a deed. That is it. But now we've got signed as a deed by April at Cambridge on the 1st of November. That is perhaps the difference. This particular precedent, which has come out of Brooks, also says signed and sealed at Cambridge on the 1st of November by the notary. To be quite frank, we the tutors don't like this, but for this particular exercise, it is quite useful. You are recording extra information. You are making it clear to the jurisdiction abroad when and where the document was signed by April, the client, and also when and where it was signed by you, the notary. And on this particular example, you would not expect those to be different. Somebody brings you a document, the client signs it, and you immediately sign it again. This is a useful example, just to try to put it into you what you're trying to do here. You're trying to give the overseas jurisdiction the information they require. And the answer, the usual question at this point is, why would you do this? And the simple reason is, because they want to know. We are not experts in foreign law. We cannot know what they want. There might be a requirement in that overseas jurisdiction that on any document like this, they do actually record when and where a person signs. So if there's a blank space, you fill it in. No matter how bizarre it is, you just go there. At the bottom of this, we're still on page 3. You will see something which says protocol number. In this case, protocol number 2010-268. You'll come across a couple of things as we're going through the year. Notaries make a lot of records, and you will come across the protocol and the register, and they're very different things. The register is more easy to understand. It's a book, or these days quite often a computer database, and it's just a permanent record of the notarial acts you perform. I'm not going to go into detail at this point. It's in the rules as to what you keep in that, but the simplest things are date, the client, the document. That is the easiest thing to understand. The protocol is slightly more confusing, so we do spend a little time. It is nothing more than, in many cases, a box where you put copy documents. In my case, in my office, it's a file, and I've just got files of copy documents. And it's just got this fancy word, protocol. Certain countries, such as certainly Spain, Portugal, they will expect the protocol number to be somewhere on the document. And there, again, as you through the year, you'll discover that civil law jurisdictions, to them, it is the notary who's keeping the permanent record. It's so they can go back to the notary and say, we need a copy of this document. Your protocol number is this. So the notary can go straight into his, wherever he's keeping his copies, and go straight to the document itself. It's just that it's just got a strange name. It's a protocol, and it is nothing more fancy. It could be a box file. It could be, in some places, a cardboard box. Certainly the scriveners, they've just got boxes and boxes of these. It's just an unusual concept that is this name. The next section I'm going to turn over is the direct notarial certificate. We're going to spend a lot of time on this through the year. I'm just going to go through this on the screen because what is it? It's a piece of paper on the whole attached to a document. It's just a form of words. It certifies that you have seen someone execute a document. Sometimes your certificate has to go on and give some more detail. Certainly almost always, this certificate that you're going to produce is going to explain how you know the person sat in front of you is who they say they are. That's going to be the absolute minimum. And as we go through the year, you'll see that more and more we're trying to cover lots of situations. So if the person sat in front of you is not the person named on the document, they've sent in an attorney. You're going to have to explain why they come to be there. If the document in front of you refers to a company, you're going to have to explain, is the person sat in front of you, is he a director? And if he's not a director, why is he there? Has he been authorised by the board of directors? And quite a few. It depends what the receiving jurisdiction wants. Quite often, and the principle in this course is that it will be on a separate sheet of paper attached to the document. And again, it might seem strange in practice that you've got a document and that on the front of it is just a sheet of paper with something like this. And all it says is, I, Simon Elliott, Notary Public, certify somebody came into my office and signed a document, and I saw them sign it, stamp, seal it, bind it up, and the document is on its way. It sounds straightforward. A lot of what we do in notarial practice appears to the client to be straightforward, but it's the underlying statements which will be relied upon when it arrives in the country. You will use a direct notarial certificate in hundreds of different situations. It might be attached to a deed, it might be attached to a contract, it might be attached to and slightly unusual situation. This is a Dutch company's house form appointing a director to a Dutch company. And there, the client has signed it. He happens to be a Japanese chap as well. And the notarial certificate is on the back. That's actually a case of where I considered it more appropriate to endorse it, which is to type on the very, very page, rather than put it on a separate sheet of paper. On this particular, I wanted to do that on this case because this company form has got many pages and has places for many signatures, and I didn't want to attach my certificate to the whole form because it will appear as though I'm dealing with the whole form. I was trying to be very careful and say, no, I'm only dealing with this one page, so that on this occasion it is endorsed on the document. But this certificate has more or less exactly the same words as it has on this example. Because again, it says, in this case, I, Norman Napier, Notary Public, certify at this particular place and on this particular day, April, came before me. With my example, it's today, 30th September 2009, before me, Simon Elliott, appeared Mr. Masatomo Miyagi, so on, and he signed this form. It is straightforward when it comes to that, but you've got to think about what the underlying presumptions are. If you, I see what you're saying. If you would, in the first example, this is a deed where the notary has attested the signature. That would not have an additional certificate. Just to go back to the four areas. These are independent of each other. So if it is a common law deed, you would not attach a direct notarial certificate. The information is all in the attestation area. You've covered all the points needed by the receiving jurisdiction. I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow that. Through the year, you will come across something called the US acknowledgement. That's on page 5. I'm just going to cover this separately because it appears to be the same. I'm going to just, if you can have a look at page 5, you'll see that something has been pre-printed. Usually, US acknowledgement is on the bottom of a form that a client will bring in. And it could be all sorts of things from buying or selling a property or through to claims for pensions. And it appears, again, as though you are saying that somebody has come before you, signed a form, and you've witnessed it, and there is actually a very subtle distinction. I'm going to read what the US acknowledgement says. The foregoing instrument was acknowledged before me this 1st November 2010 by April Brownlow. It was acknowledged. It wasn't signed. It was acknowledged. It is an American concept where the person in front of you is really saying, I am signing this of my own free will. I am entering into this transaction without any undue influence. They could sign it before they arrive at the office. They normally come in and they do sign it in front of you, but you are not witnessing the signature in this case. You are asking them to confirm they're entering this into their own free will. They understand what they are signing. You'll find that we look at the US acknowledgement a lot simply because we see a lot of them in practice. They are actually quite straightforward, I'm pleased to say, because they're usually there and it's a form-filling exercise. You think, great, and you just get your pen out and you have to cross out state of Florida and write England and Wales and just go through it. But again, hang on, one of the slides has disappeared. I'll mention this briefly. At the bottom of this acknowledgement, again, we're on page 5, you'll see my commission expires. And we've got here, does not expire in the UK, and a commission number. This is an American thing. In America, notaries are appointed for a period of time, usually a couple of years, and they are given a serial number. So they expect this to be inserted in. Once you're appointed as a notary, you are appointed for life. So your faculty does not have an expiry date. And so it is quite nice. It does say it does not expire in the UK. Some people like to put my commission expires with life. I used to do that. And I
do that.
Do you? There you go.
I use the word my commission expires with death.
Yes.
I don't like that.
Exactly. The last two areas are dealing specifically with documents which are signed by a client. The next area we're going to look at is standalone notarial certificates. There isn't a sample of one here. Sorry, there is. Even I'm getting lost with my own notes. Page 6. This is a sample where the client does not sign anything. They've brought to you something and they've been told they need a certified copy. There's a large area of notarial practice, particularly with people obtaining jobs abroad. They will come in and say, I've been asked to provide a notarized copy of my qualification certificates. Or they might be getting married abroad. I need a certified copy of my birth certificate. There's another area which crops up occasionally, which is you might have to be asked for a statement of English law. Someone has died in an overseas country, or they have property in an overseas country, and the lawyers over there have decided that they need to administer the estate of that person in accordance with English law rather than the laws of that particular country. Again, why might they do that? And that's none of our concern. They would do that because they have determined that is the best course of action for their client. But we may be asked to confirm in certain circumstances. The one I find often happens is to confirm that under the laws of England and Wales, a spouse would inherit a husband's entire property. That doesn't happen in civil law jurisdictions, which you might have picked up from last year. We have to be very careful when we're preparing these certificates of fact. You'll find, again, as a solicitor, we get used to that. Somebody wants a copy. You put it through the photocopy, you get your rubber stamp, ka-dumpf, and that's it. Nothing else. You just quick signature and a date, and that seems to keep everyone happy. As a notary, we are usually expected to go into a little bit more detail. First of all, a rubber stamp is usually not sufficient. People expect to see a full A4 sheet of paper with it set out. Certainly they will want to know who you are in the sense of your name and address so that they can come back to you to find you and say, did you produce this certificate? Is this qualification actually a genuine qualification? And again, later on, certainly by the time we get to January, in the January weekend at Madingley, you'll begin to twig that there's a lot more to producing certified copies than you realise. The important one that we are very careful with are degree certificates. I mean, what is a degree certificate? It's a piece of paper. It's got a fancy stamp on the bottom, and it just says somebody has been awarded a degree. Is it real? Or have they been down to Prontoprint or bought it over the internet? And as we go through, you will find that there's a difference between certifying something as a copy and verifying that it is genuine. I cover that more in the text. This is something that you can read when you get back. Oops, getting lost. Public form. I'm going to mention this only briefly because there is a full session on public form. This particular example on pages 8 and 9 is just to demonstrate what you might see in practice. And here's one I produced earlier in the Best of Blue Peter. It's double column so that there's an English and a foreign language version. Sometimes you might get it just in English. Sometimes you might get a document like this in just a foreign language. I'll leave it to Anne to explain why we worry about these. And later on, public form has a different liability to what we've looked at before now. What I will say is the key to public form is the opening statements, which are that before me, a notary public appears, the client. If you take the standard English contract, the standard English deed, it starts either this conveyance is made the blank day of blank between Fred, seller, Joe, buyer. There's no mention of a notary. With the public form, in a public form document, the first person mentioned is the notary, usually. It looks as though the notary has taken over. And in civil law jurisdictions, that's actually the case, because it is the appearance of the clients in front of the notary which causes a transaction to occur. Earlier on, Ian mentioned that in Spain, the only way that conveyancing works is that the parties, the seller and the buyer, stand in the notary's office. That's actually the only way it can be done. In English law, we transfer land by signing a document. And when two solicitors date the document, the thing is delivered, the land has changed ownership. Nope, not a hope. In the civil law jurisdictions, it has to be the buyer and the seller stood in front of the notary's office, and in certain countries, it's not any notary's office, it has to be the notary who has control of that area. So the key to public form is the presence of the client in front of the notary. And again, Ian earlier on mentioned that the most common form of document is the power of attorney. Again, similarly, a power of attorney in Spain is only valid if it is signed in front of a notary somewhere in the world. And this is our role. We are keeping the legal system in Spain or Portugal or wherever happy. We are complying with their requirements. Their requirements are simple. A power of attorney, to be valid, has to be signed in front of a notary. End of discussion. That's our purpose. I'm not going to say any more. I don't want to steal Anne's thunder on that. We will talk about foreign language. This particular example is in double language. We do not expect anybody to understand a word of any language other than English. Unless you're Welsh, when you might want to be involved in Welsh, but don't come to the tutors about that. We're not going to ask you to look at foreign language directly, but indirectly, we do expect you to understand what you do. If somebody puts something on your desk which is in a foreign language, or is, in this particular case, part English and part foreign. Sometimes you can deal with it, sometimes you can't. There's a set of rules which later on, as you're going through the course, you will tweak. Just because a document is in a foreign language does not necessarily mean you have to send them out of the door and say, come back with an interpreter, I want to see them, and so on. There are certain ways of dealing with it. That's for another day. That has dealt with the four areas that we really want to look at, the four types of document. The second area we're going to look at this morning is legalisation. Probably some of you will have no idea what this is at this stage, because we're very early on. I want you to think, what is the purpose of a notary? What makes a notary special? What is the notary doing? The notary is someone who can be trusted. Trusted to say that the person sat in front of them is the person who they say they are. That is the simplest function. This document, on this particular occasion, has been signed by April Brownlow. I know it's April Brownlow because she sat in front of me and she's given me her passport. So really the notary is saying, I'm not just a witness, I'm a witness, but I am also guaranteeing this document has been signed by April, not just anybody who's wandered in the street pretending to be. So this document disappears out of your office and lands in a lawyer's desk somewhere else in the world. Spain, Paraguay, Australia. And they look at this and say, great. There's a signature that says April. There's a signature which says Norman Napier, notary. Who the hell's Norman? Is he somebody who's popped down to Pontyprint and bought himself a rubber stamp and a seal? It's great if you're in England, you can get out Yellow Pages and look him up and give him a ring, but if you're at the other end of the world, and certainly 100 years ago, it was pretty difficult. The role of a notary is to give third parties confidence the documents have been properly executed or with other certificates that the fact's true. When it goes to a foreign country, they're going to look at this and say, no, I don't trust this notary. I've never heard of him. I can't be certain he exists. How can we try to give somebody in a foreign country confidence that I am a notary and therefore the person who signed the document is who they say they are? There's two ways of doing it. Historically, and that's the best way to look at it, is that if I'm in Spain, I'm going to be sat behind my desk in Spain thinking, who do I trust in England? I trust the Spanish consulate, the Spanish embassy, because they're Spanish and they're government officials. So if the consulate can tell me that they recognise Norman or Simon or Ian Rogers, and they can put a stamp on this document that say, yep, Simon Elliott, Norman Napier is a notary public, then I'll be happy with it. In the simplest terms, legalisation is nothing more than a rubber stamp and a signature by a consulate that the person signing the document is a notary public. They don't certify the client, they can't. They don't have every client in the country, but they can certify the notary. Now that became very cumbersome. Because you can imagine that you qualify as a notary. How many countries are in the world? I meant to look this up, but there's about 190 countries. I don't know how many consulates there are in London, but there's well over 100. So you would qualify, and immediately you would have to write to over 100 consulates and say, I'm a new notary public, here's my signature and seal, and it would go in. And that, you can imagine, would be incredibly unwieldy. So fortunately, lots of countries got together back in 1961 and came up with a simpler system. the Hague Convention simplifies the method of legalization. So instead of this lawyer in Spain looking on the back of a document for the stamp of the Spanish consulate, he will look for something called an apostille. And here's one I did earlier. I'll mention this. How difficult is it to spell the word Christopher? Well, if you're in a rush, it's actually quite easy to get it wrong. This has cost me money a couple of years ago. I rushed out something quickly, sent it down to the Foreign Commonwealth Office for this, £28.80. Comes back and say, blast. This is why I've got one. This is the apostille. You will hear about this time and time again. There's my signature and seal and a rubber stamp, and on the back of it is a sticky bit of paper. If you come and have a look later, it's actually embossed with the seal of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. If I read this out, this is quite simple. United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. This document has been signed by Simon P. Elliott, acting in the capacity of Notary Public, and bears the seal of the said Notary Public. At London, certified the 1st November 2006, Her Majesty's Principal Secretary of State. So what's the difference between that and what a notary signs? The notary... Put your hand down, Sanjay, I'm answering that. Because this was 2006. It's 2006. It's before they moved. You'll discover they moved. They're not in London anymore. They're at Milton Keynes. Yes, I know, but that's for another day. Don't confuse them. Yes. We have a chain of trust now. We have a chain of trust that the client has been in and signed the contract, and I, as a notary, have witnessed it. It then goes to the English Foreign and Commonwealth Office and the English government, put their stamp on it. And hopefully that is then good enough. Because the people in Spain can look at this and say, well, we've heard of the British government. If they say Simon Elliott or Norman is a notary, must be, and he's seen the client, so it's okay, we can rely on the document.
So they do that on the basis that they have a register they can check?
Yes. Yes, the first thing you will do is, when you qualify, is you immediately write the Foreign Commonwealth Office legalisation section and say, I've just qualified, here's my signature and seal, and I imagine they check with the faculty office that this is true before they actually commit themselves. Because they are committing themselves then to actually confirming you are who you say you are. I've just been through that because I'm going to actually pick up another point on that later on. There are four kinds of legalisation. The first one is none. Commonwealth countries on the whole are quite happy with just your signature and seal. So that somebody comes to see you, if you take the first example, go right back to that first case where it looks like an English deed. They come in, they sign the document, you add your signature and seal, and it just disappears off to Canada or Australia. That's fine. That is the end of it. Those countries are quite happy with just your signature and seal. Being part of the Commonwealth, historically part of the Empire, they feel that, if necessary, they can come back into the UK and check who you are. They have strong links with the UK, and that's where it will end. The second form of legalisation is exactly what I've just described, the apostille, a certificate by the English government that I am a notary. That's what this is. It's got a fancy name, it's got a French name, because back in 61, they tended to take a lead in international conventions. But people will come in and ask for, I need an apostille. The best one is they come in and say, I need the Hague stamp. That is unbelievably common. I've been told to get the Hague stamp. It is frighteningly common, but you will begin to recognise they mean they have a document which needs to be signed by them, signed by you as notary, and then is sent to the Foreign Commonwealth Office. There is another form of legalisation which still exists. There are countries which have not signed up to the Hague Convention. Principally, Brazil is the one you will come across. Brazil does not recognise this certificate. My signature and seal and the signature seal of most notaries is recorded in the Brazilian consulate. So if somebody comes in with a document for Brazil, you would sign it, seal it yourselves, and then it would go down to the Brazilian consulate, who will put their stamps on it. It will come back to you, go to Brazil, and they'll have a look and they'll say, yeah, Brazilian consulate know who Simon Elliott is. It must be all right. And then strangely, there are countries who say, we want an apostille. But then we want this apostille stamped by our own consulate. We're going to look at that in a second. So it does become a bit of a runaround and to some degree defeats the object of this. But if that's what the country says they want, who are we to argue? We explain it to the client. The client comes in, signs the document. We sign and seal it after checking who they are. We send it down to Milton Keynes, or London if it's the rush. Get one of these put on the document, and then it disappears into the consulate, who will add extra stamps and naturally take more money off people. Just give me a second, because what we're going to do is we're just going to have a look at one or two more. Oops. Okay, this is an example of what I've just mentioned is, here you can see the apostille at the bottom, and this has gone into another consulate, and all they've done is taken this and put a big stamp on the top of it, taking money for you. There's another one. That's Sri Lanka. All of this is adding to the chain of trust. Which one's that one? Pakistan. This is a really big one. Look at this one. Under there will be an apostille somewhere. And the Philippines, they've got a dirty, great big sheet of paper, which they've attached to it. And here we go. I believe that Mr. Casey of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office has authenticated the badge, so on, legalised the document. So again, they're actually certifying that this officer of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office is known to them. And you sort of might be... sorry about that, I'll explain that what that is in a second. Why is everybody going to this length? Simple reason is, that's what the country wants. Not for us to argue and say this is unnecessary. If that's what they want, that's what they want. It's in their legislation. That's the end of it. This is what an English apostille looks like. This is what a Luxembourg apostille looks like when it is scanned really, really badly. It would be a very, very, very nice picture of Luxembourg in there. And but I think you can tell there's is just a sticker which goes on the back of a document. This is the kind of apostille you'll get in the Cayman Islands, or if you're really naughty, you get from Prontoprint if you get them to make it up. And I look at that one and think, well, you know, it doesn't look very reliable, that one, but if that's what the Cayman Island wants as an apostille, so be it. That's again another one which... Ian, what country is that one? I was about to say Russian, but I suspected it wasn't. So these apostilles come in all shapes and sizes. And look at that. This is a huge one. This is a full A4 sheet. Massive is that one. And again, America, this looks really, really grand if you saw it in colour. But a lot of it is just printed out. Again, you could have those made if you wanted. This is... an example of legalisation, which is just the consulate. And I imagine Ian, legalisada. Was this legalising the signature of Elisa Grafton?
Elisa Grafton is a notary in my office.
Yeah, and it definitely says notary public there. So it's pretty straightforward, or it appears to be, except for the fees sometimes they have to pay. Again, it's this chain of trust. We're creating a chain of trust. All right. The fees on this particular kit for the apostille, £28.80, unless you want it express in London. Oh, no point in recording this. You'll find out later on. Fees for consular legalisation, absolutely anything, £20, £30, £40, £50 is normal. Unless it's a commercial document with a UAE, which I think is £400. £410 now. She's absolute.
£10 is for express delivery.
Oh, I see.
You know, when you're paying £400, you just say £410.
Right. She can be a little bit frightening for a client when you say, UAE, do you know how much the consular fees are? And you tell them, and they go white. Particularly when they've been asked to supply everything in triplicate. So, back to. Where next? Well, you should be able to do when you're at home this weekend, basking in the sunshine, saying, I'll go through all my notes, is you should actually be able to pick up either Brooke or Notary, Brooke or Dunford, and place any of the precedents there into one of the four categories I've created at the beginning. Now, through the year, you will hear us say, do not be a slave to these precedents, because in an assignment, or in the exam, and more importantly, in real life, you will say, right, this is what is in front of me, I must find the precedent for that, and you will not find it. It's just like conveyancing. You want something, you go to the Encyclopedia of Forms and Precedents, and can you find something that fits exactly? Nah. You can get something that is close, and you've got to think about it. You've got to make things fit. You've got to just think about what you're doing. What are you trying to establish? And keep it simple. You'll get lost a little bit. Go back to this. Go back to the four categories. Yeah.
The examples you have to write as with about Brazil, Peru, the Philippines, and Sri Lanka.
Yeah, they.
Are you always in the third category, or not? That's my question. If you're always in the third category, you need to get a certification by foreign consulate, or not?
Now, things have been changing. Let me just remind myself what I've put. So I wrote this a couple of years ago. Where are you looking at? Which page? Oh, so... I'm not going to answer that because I've discovered that they've started shifting, in particular Peru. It was in the category where it was just consularisation. Don't rely on...
It
was in the third category. Was. Peru is moving slowly to the Hague Convention. So, and I only found out that this morning. So... a lot of this is a movable feast. This again is something that you have to be careful of. In the back of Brooks is a list of countries which have signed up to the Hague Convention, but it's out of date. There are other places you have to check, which you will discover during the year.
Can I just ask you on from that? You use the word consularisation. Do you use that word just for?
I shouldn't.
Yeah. Or when it goes to the FCO.
It's not a real word. I shouldn't have used it. It's ignore the fact that I used the word. It is legalized by just the consulate, or it is legalized with an apostille and then by the consulate. That is the correct terminology. Go ahead.
Following that same question, in that sense, in the books as well, when you talk about consularization, I think it also covers the embassy, for example, in Italy.
Within an embassy, there's a difference between an embassy and a consulate.
Yes.
And if there is an embassy, you will find a consular section. An embassy deals with the states of affairs of state. An embassy and the ambassador deals with relations between governments. A consulate, or the consular section of an embassy, deals with people and businesses. So, yes, things will appear to go into an embassy, such as like the perhaps the Italian embassy. Right. But inside you will find it is going to a consular section. And also, on the whole, it's not... Don't get too het up about this, because this is not really too much part of the course. It is just appreciating the difference between an embassy and a consulate and a high commission. You get high commissions with Commonwealth countries, but they also have consular sections.
Okay. Even though they're in different buildings? Or
they can be in different buildings, or they can be in the same building.
Okay.
Don't worry. Yeah, just do the course. Right, we've got to the end of this time. Just use this as the fundamental guide when you sort of get lost, see what the basic principles are. And finally, please practice your handwriting for a while, because when it comes to the exam, you will find it's very hard to write for a length of time. You are not used to it. Thank you. I've been asked to move along.
Sorry,
you're all right.
Getting the water ready.
Are you right?
Warm at the back.
I'll
got to wear that. Thank you.
And yes.